We're going to start off and listen to the tune Goldfinger that Vic is appearing on. And use this as a little segue into talking about those recording with John Barry and the John Barry 7 and working on film scores, which you've done, both have done a fair amount of work on.
Yeah, that was Shirley Bassey at her finest. I was talking to Gordon earlier about it, of course, and the interesting thing is that on the recording, as you can hear me going jump, but on that last note, she'd had to do this, like the end takes of this about three or four times, and she can be a bit expletive-wise, as I can now show you. Anyway, when asked to do this again by Norman Yule, she said, oh, if it, bloody hell, and behind the screen, she said, I can't do this. He says, I want one more time. So anyway, suddenly there was a shout and scream, and a bra comes over the top of this the screen. And that's how she got this last high note. And, you said, no. And the rest, Shirley. But that never happened. But that was part of the situation with John Barry, which of course Andy was involved with as well. Andy played with a John Barry 7 at one time, as I did.
Vic, who was the John Barry 7? A lot of these folks won't know.
No, the John Barry 7 was a group that was formed by John Barry before he was a sort of big composer. And he used the 7 as a way into his composing and his filmic career. I remember one time we turned up at this big studio at EMI, and there was about 50 instruments there, 50 musicians. And Norman Newell, who was the producer, who produced this Goldfinger, he said, Barry, he said, what's all this? He said, I thought this was the John Barry 7. So he said, well, yeah, it's kind of augmented a bit. So anyway, we went through this number, and it turns out that this was the end of John Barry's contract with EMI, and he used the whole studio and the orchestra as a demo for his next film, he says. So. Anyway, that was it. That was the way John Barry was. He worked. I know him very well. I'm still in touch with him, although he's not too well at the moment. But he was very sort of one-eyed and one-direction. And I suppose that's where he got. You know, but he was a good musician, a good guy to work for. You know, a good guy to know. Now,
how many films did you work on with him?
Oh, well, a lot, really. You know, right at the beginning, there was a few sort of like Beat Girl or like pop rock type films. And then, of course, the Dr. No and Goldfinger and about five, six Bond films, and then bits with the Ipcress file and all the other things that he did. Not a lot, you know, and I can't sort of run them all down. The last Bond film I did was License to Kill, but that was with Michael Caine, who's now since passed away. But It was a good time, but in the 60s it was fantastic. All these things used to happen, and as Andy knows, that we used to do like three sessions a day, 10 to 1, 2 to 5, 7 to 10, not necessarily in one studio, and five, six titles a session, which you had to come in, play it, read it, and thank you, get out, and here's your money, which of course to this day we regret, because if we'd have been more business-wise, we'd have had more residuals than we do at the moment.
So how many major studios were there in London, say, in 1964?
What do you think, Andy?
Well, about 10 or something.
10, must have been about 10.
But they're spread all over the place.
Yeah, way out West London, Denham, to North London, to Wembley. Mm-hmm. And if you got the afternoon in Denham and the morning in Wembley, then you had to drive like crazy, because you just weren't late at least. No. You just weren't. If there was a 60-piece orchestra there and you turn up half an hour late and everybody was waiting, they'd say, well, okay, that's 60 times £5, so that's £300, please. So people weren't kind of late. It's a great incentive to be on time. Right.
They made you pay for the extra time.
Yeah, you would. Although it happened in one instance that I know of, but it was a threat that hung over your head. Not so much now, everything's got a bit more lackadaisical, you know, but. You know, guys like Andy and myself and all the other fellows, we just weren't late.
Yeah, well, it's tough for the drummer, right?
Oh, yeah.
The unfortunate thing was they didn't, like today, they have a resident drum set in every studio, but you had to take your own drums. So you had to have time to do all those other things in between, you know. take them down from one studio, drive to them, and then put them back up. And if they said you started at 10, the downbeat was 10 o'clock.
Right.
And you've got to be there half an hour, 45 minutes at least.
Right? That's right. And it was tense. Sometimes they get into a studio, it was more tense and more stressful than actually doing the session, because sometimes it's like a lot of jobs, you know, sometimes you're either bored to death or scared to death. And you'd get this, and I used to smoke like crazy then, and used to get there and light a cigarette, put it on the stand, and go, oh shit. You know, or, whoa, that's all right, and turn it over and says, well, I said, carry on smoking, you're either sort of like this, or there's nothing to play. Well, there's something to play, but not really actually the terms of having to play. So, plus all the getting there and backs and forwards, it was a kind of a stressful time. You know, but good, I wouldn't change it.
No.
For anything, I would have not done what I did in the 60s and 70s. You know, but